Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Cinco de Mayo yesterday, and immigration on the minds of many. Arizona, just the name, now brings up emotions of all kinds. The state's tough new immigration law has drawn condemnation, resistance, lawsuits, and, according to a New York Times CBS poll, the support of 51% of Americans. That's as close to 50-50 as you can get with a majority for the law. Today we're talking with three big Latino voices about Arizona and its resonance about immigration. This hour on Point, Mexican Americans on immigration, Arizona's law, and America's dilemma. You can join the conversation, Latinos, immigrants, first generation or 10th. Let us hear from you today. And for everyone, how should this country be dealing with immigration? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York is Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA. She was in Arizona reporting last week. She's worked for CNN and PBS. She was born in Mexico City. Maria Hinojosa, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Hey, Tom. Good to be here.
Joining us from San Francisco is Richard Rodriguez, prominent Latino intellectual known for his books like Brown, The Last Discovery of America, Hunger of Memory, and Days of Obligation, An Argument with My Mexican Father. He's an editor for New American Media in San Francisco, contributed to Slate and the PBS NewsHour. He was born into a first-generation Mexican immigrant family in California. Richard Rodriguez, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks, Tom.
And from Los Angeles, we're joined by Jeff Valdez, chairman and founder of CTV, that's S-I. It's a Latino cable network in California focused on young Latinos. He grew up in Colorado of Mexican-American heritage. And Jeff, welcome back to you as well. Thanks for jumping in here.
Very happy to be here, Tom.
So I just want to begin to pick up what the whole country is really thinking and talking about. I mean, there's a lot going on these days, from the Gulf of Mexico to Greece to flooding in Nashville and you name it. But behind it all, this immigration issue is enormous. Maria Hinojosa, what do you make, first of all, of the poll out this week from the New York Times and CBS? 51% of Americans polled say the Arizona law has it about right, is the way the question puts it.
Well, I think the problem is that probably that 51% doesn't quite, and I do not fault them. I don't judge. I think that there's a lot of information and misinformation, and there's been a lot of how the media has played a role in all of this. But I think that that statistic probably comes with not profoundly, on a very human level, understanding exactly what's going on in Arizona. And I understand that because people are busy, lots of things are happening in their lives, it's the end of the school year, you know, there's a lot of stuff. And if you are not intimately related to the issue of immigration, if you are not Latino, specifically, although I think across the board, all immigrants, you know, you're probably like, wow, you know, we have a problem and I kind of see all this stuff happening in my neighborhood and you know, I don't quite understand if the government really is dealing with this, and I'm a little uncomfortable. And yeah, it sounds like, yeah, that they should do something. So I don't think that it's motivated. I'm hoping, in my most optimistic moments, I'm hoping that it's not motivated by sheer and utter hatred. On the other hand, I think that you have to recognize that there has been something that has happened in our country where the dialogue about these immigrants has become problematic, how they are discussed, how they are portrayed, how they are seen. And what I don't think we're seeing enough of, and this is what I saw last week when my team went down with me to Phoenix, mm-hmm. is the human story of what it means to be living in the most industrialized, civilized nation in the world, we say, and to be feeling like you are under assault and attack and target just because you're Latino. So it doesn't have to be that you're Mexican-American. You're Latino, or because you're Mexican, or because you're brown skin, or because you're an immigrant. I mean, in my essay that I wrote yesterday, I was like, exactly how is it that the Arizona is going to train its police officers to stop a blonde-haired man and a red-headed woman with cause over this law. I'm just like, exactly how are they going to do that? So, you know, when you get to start asking technical questions, it's just like a little ridiculous.
Let's hear a couple of voices from Arizona. First, the sort of famous, infamous Arizona Sheriff Joe Arpaio, known for his very tough immigration enforcement stance and now under investigation by the Justice Department. He said last week that the federal government should stay out of this.
This is Arizona. The people here, 78%, want this law. And now the president, once again, is becoming involved in Arizona law enforcement.
And here, from an NBA star of all things, the Phoenix Suns, Arizona's NBA team, jumped into the political fray yesterday. They wore jerseys at the request of their owner, Robert Sarver, that said on Cinco de Mayo, that said Los Suns instead of the Phoenix Suns. There was a lot of pushback against that, something like, I don't know, 79 out of 85 letters to the Arizona Republic against it. But here's one of the big stars of the Phoenix Suns, Steve Nash.
The law is very misguided. I think it's to the detriment of our society and our civil liberties, and I think it's really important for us to stand up for things we believe in.
Richard Rodriguez, what do you make of the 51% of Americans polled saying the Arizona law is about right?
I think the numbers are probably right, but which is to say that Americans are afraid of the dark these days. We have been now for some years, probably since September 11th. Afraid of our own shadow. We have this tendency in the United States, a country I love very much and that has been very kind to me and my family. We have this tendency, it's our worst habit, toward a kind of hypocrisy, this notion that we are the innocent party in this. And you hear a lot of that in Arizona right now, that these people are doing this to Arizona, they're coming in against our will and so forth, without any sense of the history of this immigration, how the United States solicited this labor from the beginning of the 20th century, how the United States has employed this labor, underpaid it, used it in various ways, deported it when it was convenient for us, and so forth. And now the newest part of the American hypocritical hymn is the notion that Mexicans are bringing violence with them. At the very point when the United States is the largest drug-consuming culture in the world, from everybody from Rush Limbaugh to a 9-year-old in an inner city or a suburban high school is on drugs. We have destabilized Afghanistan, Bolivia, Thailand, Colombia, and now Mexico with our drug habit. And we talk about the criminality of other cultures coming into the pristine deserts of Arizona. And it just strikes me as at least 51% of Arizona is hypocritical.
Jeff, how do you see it? Lots of Americans out of work. Everybody knows the numbers of 11 or 12 immigrants without legal documentation, probably in the country. I think a lot of people look at that and say, gee, maybe there's a job I should have there. Is this hypocrisy? Is this afraid of the dark or something real that's driving the numbers?
I'd be happy to I'll get a van. If anybody wants to go out and pick strawberries today, I'll give them my address and I'll drive them out there. We can set them up with a job right away. I mean, I think it's absurd when you really think about what's going on because, you know, the people, and it comes down to image, and this is what everybody's really, I believe, concerned about, is when you look at the people, our community, you'd think we're talking about two different people because on one side, you know, you have people who perceive us as lazy, criminals, bad folks, and when I look at them, I see family-oriented, patriotic, hardworking, and it's a completely different perspective. So it really comes down to image, and it's not just and even the people that are friendlies towards this conversation. I've been watching the news every night, and even when people are saying this is a bad law, and they reinforce it, with the images of people climbing over a fence. So if every night people are programmed, and that word I think is a very critical word for this conversation, programmed. People in this country have been programmed constantly with images of a community that immediately equates with illegal, not American. And the only conversation we ever have as Latinos is about immigration, when actually the number one issue with Latinos is education. You know, so hopefully when we get past this immigration debate, we'll focus on real things like education and bigger issues to deal with. But we do, in the interim, have to deal with people's fears, which amount to lack of proper exposure to a community.
Maria, isn't there a problem with the law, though? I mean, that border has become, There certainly is lawlessness there. Richard
Tom,
Rodriguez,
Wait a second. Come on now. So we, the United States, can send men, women, monkeys, whatever you want, to the moon. And we can explore other planets. We can do so many things. And you know what? We still can't seem to get a hold of that border.
What does that mean?
It's ridiculous. Here's my son. My son, and I do think it's important, you know, because sometimes it just is, as Jeff says, ridiculous. As Richard says, it's ridiculous. So my son identifies as a Latino. He knows that immigration is a central part of who we are because we are immigrants. We are immigrant parents, my husband and I, from the Dominican Republic. So he's now writing a term paper, his eighth grade paper, on Mexican immigration to the United States. Chose it entirely on his own. I was very happy. I'm letting him do it on his own, really. And so he came to me, he said, Mom, so here's this weird thing. So like when you look at it, the United States, and he went through, I was so proud of him, he went through from 18, I think he started about post-1865, and went through all of the moments when there was an economic need for Mexican immigrant labor, and he broke it down, this, you know, 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. So the question is this. So really, and I think that Jeff is right on when you're talking about being programmed. And this is where, again, the media has been central. Remember, I worked at CNN with Lou Dobbs. use the term illegals to refer to these people. Do you know who told me never to call them illegals? It was the survivor of the Holocaust, Elie Wiesel. He said, once you label a people illegal, that's how the Holocaust started. So the connections have to be made.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are listening this hour to Latino voices, Mexican-American voices, on immigration and the controversial new law in Arizona. Jeff Valdez is with us. He's chairman and founder of CTV. He joins us today from Los Angeles. From New York, Maria Hinojosa is with us, journalist, author, host of NPR's Latino USA. You may have heard her for years on television and on the radio. From San Francisco, Richard Rodriguez is with us, author and journalist whose books include Hunger of Memory, Brown, and Days of Obligation, and an Argument with My Mexican Father. Let's hear his little bit from NPR's Ted Robbins. He was in Arizona last week. Maria Hinojosa was there as well. Ted spoke with Arizona native Steve Holbrook, one of the majority of likely voters in Arizona who supports the law. Here's Holbrook first.
The country was built on laws. They're here illegally. They're breaking the law.
So what good do you hope will come out of the law, this new one?
The ones that are here illegally will either be prosecuted, sent back home, or make them legal. How many of them come over here that have criminal backgrounds, criminal records, come over here, do their crimes, and go back home?
And go back home. There's an Arizona view. Here's another Arizonan, Senator John McCain, weighing in on the immigration debate, saying it's not, doesn't have to be racial profiling.
I do not want any discriminatory behavior, and I've talked to a group of lawmen a shorter time ago, a Saturday sheriff of Pinal County and police chiefs. They think they can implement this law without racial profiling.
Okay, try that, though. Pretty tough. And here's a response from L.A. Mayor after protest rallies this last weekend in his city and many others. This is L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa.
Laws that require our law enforcement professionals to profile one against the other have no place in the United States of America that I love, that you love, that we want to be a part of.
Jeff Valdez, Maria Hinojosa, and Richard Rodriguez with us this hour. You can join us at 800-423-TALK. Let's get a call right off the top from Boston. Victor. Victor, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Very well.
Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. My point is, very simply, the relationship between Mexico and the United States is a big hypocrisy. And regarding immigration, regarding social justice, I think Mexico and the United States need to sit down and really discuss their both interests regarding who's crossing the border and what reason they're using it for. I think the relationship between Canada and the United States is the big example. They have a perfect relationship. Everything goes well, making billions of dollars a year, even a month. But then when it comes to Mexico and the United States, it's just like a Cold War. They don't want to talk about it. They don't talk about it. They just pretend everything's okay. And also, you know, this law affects Americans, such as myself, as an immigrant, in the sense that it makes me feel that I'm in the wrong place, because humans are people who move everywhere from generations and generations. And if you decide to move to one place in the in part of the world, you should be with the right, with the rationale there, to be given the right to live there. If you are a perfectly legal person to live in there, meaning you're not hurting anybody, you're not bringing any violence or any drugs or anything like that, I mean, I don't see the big deal about this.
Victor, we've got the point, and I'm sure it's shared by many. Richard Rodriguez, step back here with Victor and all of us for a minute. I mean, he says, look at the law, but look at social justice. And these two have a very uneasy relationship at this border.
You know, I was recently, 2 weeks ago, speaking to seminarians at a Protestant Dutch Reform seminary in Michigan. And I said to them that as Americans, they can make some determination about the border, fences, walls, and everything else. But as Christians, I think they had a different obligation, and that is that the religious imperative in this instance was to treat the stranger kindly. It seems to me one of the oddest things about this debate in a country that Sarah Palin is otherwise described as a Christian nation is how little religion has figured in this debate. I live half of my year in Europe, and I'll tell you that the immigration debate in Europe right now is all about religion. It's mainly about Islam, of course, and the declining birth rate of European countries, and the fact that Islamists now begin to imagine a Muslim Europe in the future. What you have in the United States, of course, is a declining birth rate, and I think the population of white non-Hispanic children has declined in the United States just by 28% in the most recent reporting period. You have a society in which increasingly the religious life of the hemisphere is coming from the South. The Mormon Church, which is the fastest growing religion in the United States, Church of Latter-day Saints, is now in its majority Spanish-speaking. The evangelical churches of America, which had begun converting Latin America after the Second World War, have done such a good job that now the projections are that by the year 2070, Latin America will be in its majority evangelical Protestant. You have Catholic nuns in these demonstrations for a very good reason, that there is a religious energy coming from the other side of the border. No one mentions that. No one, as Maria said, everybody uses this language of illegality and criminality. No one talks about the religious dynamic of this movement.
But what is the religious imperative you're talking about? Is it to take the border down, to declare open borders?
It may be that. It may be to see the Americas whole. This morning, earlier this morning, I was watching on the Today Show what I watch every morning on when Americans look at their weather forecasts on the morning or evening news. There will be a man or woman who will show the map of the United States without any reference to Canada or Mexico. The United States of America is portrayed as a balloon that floats in rather like the Macy's Day Parade in New York, floats without any land connection to its neighbors. So there's never any weather in Canada. There's never any weather in Mexico. This notion that the United States exists independently of its neighbors is, I would suggest, unhealthy. And it leads, I think, to not only the ridiculous notion that there is no weather in Guadalajara or there is no weather in Toronto, but it leads more deeply to a kind of innocence about our place in the world, that we see ourselves innocent of our implication in other cultures. So we keep coming back to the question, what should we do for them? When the question is really, what have we done to them? And how did we set this dynamic in motion? As a Christian, I'm quite content to march in parades. I'm not marching with an American flag, as I said to an evangelical woman in Washington a few weeks ago. It's sufficient to walk with a cross or a Bible. The challenge that's being placed upon our churches right now, which has been muted by right-wing talk radio and Fox television, which has insisted that this is only a political issue. The energies right now are totally secular and political. But I'm telling you, someone like Samuel Rodriguez, for example, who's the head of the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, 18,000, 20,000 churches, 15 million Hispanic members, has threatened schism with the black and white evangelical churches over this issue.
But I want to be sure that we understand what you're saying. I mean, listeners of all stripes are going to be listening here. You're all prominent Latinos, each in your own right. I mean, Jeff Valdez, do you think that, I mean, can a just nation, a moral nation, not have borders?
Well, it didn't at one time. You know, if you look back, and again, going back to education, you know, and to Richard's point about North America, I've actually had on two different occasions where I tried to use an upgrade certificate back when they had upgrade certificates that were good for North America and the Caribbean, and this is at an airlines, and they wouldn't accept it because they said, I was going to Mexico City, and they said, we can't accept that. This says North America. I'm like, exactly. And they had to bring out a supervisor because two different people at the counter didn't realize that Mexico was part of North America. So you know, and when you look at historically, you know, one of the things people don't realize is the contributions historically of Spanish-speaking people to this country. I don't know if I didn't even realize this. There's a guy named Dr. David Hayes Bautista who educated me to the fact that the Continental Army had more Spanish-speaking troops fighting for the freedom of this country than there were English-speaking troops. There were 7,000 Spanish-speaking troops and 5,000. And the dollar bill sign came from Mexico. It meant peso fuerte because the continental dollar had no value. It wasn't backed by anything. So when people paid with things with Mexican gold and silver, it was stamped with the dollar bill sign.
But what's
so it plays into the issue of fear. It goes into education and fear. And I think historically as this country, and what Richard was talking about, people are afraid. People are afraid of change as opposed to embracing change. And ironically, I believe a lot of these 78% of people that believe this is a good law in Arizona, according to the sheriff, you know, what's ironic is probably most of them go to Mexico on vacation.
But Maria, I mean, should people listen to you three with your, you know, deep backgrounds in all this and say, well, what I've heard there is, you know, bring down the border, it's a merger with Mexico, and that's fine.
I know, I'm just thinking, oh my God, I can see the headline. Three prominent
right now,
Mexican-Americans
well,
go on national radio
right.
and declare that there should be a borderless country and that there should be, it's just like...
I'll argue the other side, Maria. We need to build a bigger wall. What do you think? I'll take that position.
You know what? As a matter of fact,
allay some fears.
Here's what I think, and actually, I came up with this idea. After reporting on the border, and this was in the year 2000, before September 11th, or was it after? No, excuse me. It was after September 11th, so it would have been like maybe 2003. I came back in such a state of shock after seeing the photographs of the bodies that end up in the morgue that die from dehydration. I really went into a state of shock. Actually, it was pre-September 11th. It was just quite horrible. And I remember coming back and saying, you know what? Yes, let's build that wall. And here's the thing. The wall has to be made of glass, so it's beautiful, okay? But it's got to be 50 feet high and 50 feet below. And that's all it's made of. It's like there's no complication, no technology. It's a 50-foot wall of glass. We have great architects who are doing these walls of glass. They can do it. And then guess what? The only entrance along this wall of glass is going to be right where the cars drive through, period, dot, end of story. If we all call for that wall and say that that's the wall we need, will it happen, in fact? Because what many people don't know is that Boeing got a contract for $28 billion, I believe, right from the U.S. government to build walls. Walls that are not, you know, when I was explaining this to my son, because even my son, you know, he's growing up in this country. He's hearing things. He's like, well, what about that wall? Doesn't that make sense, Mom?
Walls. It was supposed to be high-tech observation and cameras and all the rest. But so what?
Well, but what I said is that, sweetie, if there's a wall, don't you think that the wall goes from point A to point B and that there's nothing, you know, like that's a wall, right? Well, this isn't a wall. There's a wall with holes. And so, you know, again, but we go into all of this dynamic history that Jeff and me and Richard know so well, we recite it. But here's the thing. There's two issues. One, we come at it from an emotional place. And believe me, I can get there very easily because as a reporter, I've been covering this for my entire career and still here we are. And we can talk about identity issues or Latina teenagers who are committing suicide or, you know, the, you know, all of the problems, the emotional devastation, mental health issues that are happening in our community as they struggle to find our place. Or, as our caller said, it makes me feel like I don't belong here. Or we simply look at it from the numbers. And if we look at it from the numbers, which I think is really interesting, okay, exactly how are we going to deport 12 million people? Exactly how would our economy benefit if we did, in fact, legalize all of these people? Oh, it would mean an immediate tax base increase of this many, you know, trillion. Oh, that would mean that all of those people whose personal economies are in a total standstill because they can't buy the house because the wife is a citizen but the husband is not, they may need to leave the country. They can't enroll their kids in school because they don't know if they're staying or going. They can't buy a car. They, you know, they're whatever. Imagine if all of that personal economy is now stabilized through a process of people who actually want to be counted. They are not hiding.
And let me get a caller, if I may. Jim in Springfield, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Jim.
Tom, welcome back, first
thank
off.
You.
And thank you for teasing out, you know, the headlines. Maria had it right, that are coming through on this are a little bit surprising. And I do resent the idea from some of the panelists that if one is not for a borderless state between the United States and Mexico, then essentially we are bigots or fantasists. I actually applaud putting through this law in the same way I applauded the Massachusetts Supreme Court ruling for gay marriage or passing its health care bill. I think it was a provocative action that needed to be taken in order to get national attention in order that this problem may be solved, solved, I use with some hesitation. Perhaps.
You think it pushes us somehow closer to grappling with immigration?
Right. And we have a huge border with Canada and with Mexico. illegal immigration will never be stanched entirely, but I think that we can be in a much better place than we are now. And I think that it should be acknowledged that whatever is done with these 12 million people, if that is the number, and I'm perfectly in favor of a path to legalization for them, that the United States as an entity, as a sovereign country, which it will remain, has a decided interest in having some control over its borders.
Jim, thanks for your call. Jeff, do you think this pushes us closer to addressing immigration, to getting on it? President Obama said yesterday it's going to be pretty tough.
Well, if it was at the bottom of the queue, obviously I would hope that it's gone up further up the queue because it is very important to deal with it. And again, I several issues. One is a lot of the undocumented people, the 12 million people are here. They don't want criminals either. You know, I've been in a lot of these neighborhoods, and believe me, they are very family oriented people who do not agree with crime. And you've got the issue of, you know, these people, back to Maria's point, these people are here. You know, hell, I'll give $1 million if somebody can come up with a real solution to get rid of 12 million people really easily. You can't. They're just not all going to get up and pull up roots and go away. So you have to deal with the issue. And I think for the administration to continue to ignore that makes the issue worse. And I encourage them and hope that the administration will deal with it because it's obviously at the top of the queue right now. We're talking about it. I think Arizona is a good thing that we are talking about it. I don't agree with the profiling issue of it. And back to the borderless the conversation we're having, you know, I believe most Hispanics would agree immigration, you should come here legally. You should. That's the reality. That's level one. Once you get past that, then you can talk about a whole different level of borderless worlds and we can get all ethereal about that. But, you know, we do agree with legal immigration, but let's figure out what the real issue is with these 12 million people in the shadows.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're listening this hour to Latino voices, Mexican-American voices on immigration. and the controversial new law in Arizona. We're joined by Jeff Valdez. He's founder of CTV, Latino Cable Network, focused on Latino youth. Maria Hinojosa is with us. You know, I've known her for years. She hosts NPR's Latino USA. Richard Rodriguez is with us from San Francisco, author of Hunger of Memory, Brown and Days of Obligation, An Argument with My Mexican Father. We've got lots of callers. David is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. David, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. It's a pleasure to be on, Tom. I'm a Mexican-born American citizen.
Yes, sir.
I've been in this country for 10 years, and I am very appalled at seeing the coverage of the news of the Arizona bill. It's everybody seems to be saying, well, poor Arizona people, they're so frustrated. But I notice a very strong hardening of the policies in Arizona. There are teachers that are being kicked out of work because they have an accent. There are new policies that are being implemented banning ethnic studies related to Hispanic issues. So it's not just an issue of poor people that are frustrated. There seems to be a very strong hardening of positions that are aimed at a specific population, and that bothers me and worries me a lot.
As a legal resident, do you feel some kind of new suspicion, prejudice? And what should we do about all this, David?
Well, there are a lot of things that have to be done. I think the media has to take care of do its part. I was in Washington on March 21st. We had a huge demonstration. 200,000 people came in and demonstrated in favor of comprehensive immigration reform, and it would barely made a blip on the radar. It was barely covered by the media. Everybody was looking at health care reform and was covering the Tea Party. There were about 800 people outside the Capitol.
No attention. But what do you say, David, to Americans who say, okay, you know, this is an immigrant country. We're practically, you know, overwhelmingly immigrants here, but we need order. We need order at the border and law.
Well, definitely. The first way to or the easiest way you can achieve order on the border is allowing for a pass to come here legally. A lot of people say, hey, why don't they get in line? Why don't they come here, you know, like everybody else, get in a line and in the line and come in? There's no line for people to stand in. There's basically no line for people to apply for working in the fields or for doing the blue-collar kind of work that most immigrants that come here undocumented.
And yet everybody wants that work in the fields to get done. David, I appreciate your call. Let's get one more from Tennessee. Leah in Jamestown, Tennessee. Leah, you're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to say that it's time we got down to brass tacks. I hear a lot of rhetoric. I hear a lot of emotional appeal. But nobody wants to deal with the law. And the law is federal. And these people that want to come across our borders, whether they're Chinese, Mexican, Puerto Rican, Cuban, Polish, wherever they're from, they need to do it legally. And when they don't, they set foot over our borders, they become criminals. They have broken the law. They say, oh, we don't want to have criminals here in the United States. We didn't come here for that. We want to have nice, stable families. Wonderful. Go back. Do it legally. Don't become criminals.
Leah, we've got it. Maria, what do you say?
Well, you know, again, my heart breaks because I hear someone like Leah that is clearly frustrated. And unfortunately, someone like Leah, again, with this amount of disinformation in her sense of who's crossing borders, included Puerto Ricans. Puerto Ricans are born American citizens. They are never immigrants. They are born American citizens. So let's just get some facts on the table, because if we don't have facts, then this is what ends up happening. Now, the other thing is that when you cross the border without papers, it's actually a misdemeanor. It is a misdemeanor. So what you would actually want is all of these people to be getting misdemeanor tickets, okay? The other thing is that when you commit a crime, Leah, and I'm assuming that maybe once, let's say, you've been caught speeding. Yeah, I'm just saying, or taking a right turn. So you created, in that moment, you did something illegal. It does not make you a permanent criminal. That act does not identify you as an illegal driver. And we need to understand that. Understand that the people who are at the, and when you hear a lot of emotion, absolutely, because for me, this is not, I'm a reporter, and I tell stories profoundly and deeply, but this is not a story just about what's happening. Yes, there are horrible, dramatic stories about families that are in horrible moments of separation in Arizona right now. This is a story about our country. This is a story about who we are as a country. And that's why this is such an emotional issue for me. Not because of what you think it is, but because this is my country. This is my country. And when my daughter, who was born in this country and knows exactly who she is and is more American than anyone, says to me, Mom, if you go to Arizona, you have to be sure to take your papers. And Mom, you have to be sure to carry them with you the whole time. And people think, oh, that's kind of funny. It's not funny. Our children should not have this notion of if you don't have papers, you are less than. This is like, I think it was on Saturday Night Live what they said. At any time that the phrase, show me your papers, is used, you know, the Nazis get a residual, you know, payment, because that is what this symbolizes. And so we as a country have to look deeply and profoundly and listen to these different voices. And I appreciate that you're listening, Leah, because others may have just turned it off. We have to listen. And I'll just leave you with one thought, one action that I did not witness, but that I was told about, that happened in front of the Capitol in Phoenix when there was a protest. Many Latinos were out, and there was a counter protest by the Minute Men, or as my sister-in-law calls them, the Minute Men. And there was you know, words going back and forth, and they were being very aggressive. And one of the Latina protesters said, "I want to cross the line," and they were like, "No, no, no." She said, "Please, I just want to hug him. I just want to hug him. He needs to know who I am, that I'm flesh and blood, and that I want the best, too." And she did. And I think that's a moment we can all hold on to.
Hey, Tom, can I ask you a question?
Yes, please. I'm not sure who's speaking there from California.
I think it was Richard and I both.
Okay.
Go ahead, Jess.
Jeff?
Well, just a real quick question, Tom.
Yes.
You know, my family history, we came here in 1620 from Spain originally, my ancestors. Now, does that mean that I'm here illegally? Because my family, I'm the descendant of people, the Spaniards, I don't think were invited here. But am I an illegal based on that?
Well,
you
clearly are not. You predate me and a vast proportion of our listeners.
Well,
but my
ancestors came here without invitation.
Well, but this gets at a really important question that I think that people listening are going to wonder. Richard, I think you've said that what we're now at is a kind of a final chapter that started with Christopher Columbus. I think people are going to, and I wonder what you mean by that. I think people are listening and asking, well, what are we? Are we a continent, or are we countries, nations? Can we justly be a bounded nation, or are you saying we can't? What do you mean when it's
I say at least we have to acknowledge this country is not based upon law. This country is based upon illegality. We stole the land from the Indians, for God's sakes. I mean, who are these? What are these platitudes supposed to mean? Spain stole the land from the Indians, then Mexico stole the land from Spain, then the gringos came into the Southwest and stole Arizona from Mexico.
But what does that mean? Lots of places are stolen from lots of people that will have no nations.
What it means, Tom, is that you cannot go on with this fiction that the Glass Temple is based upon law. The Glass Temple is based upon the movements of people in the world. People are moving all over the world right now. The question for you and your listeners is not about Mexicans, but it's about poverty. People who are poor now have mobility in the world. They are moving to places where middle-class and upper-middle-class societies do not want them. When I go to Davos and hear all these businessmen in Switzerland, they talk about a borderless world, by which they mean the ability of first-world economies to go into countries where they can make profit. When we talk about the poor, we suddenly talk about law and order and borders. That's what this issue is all about. It's not about looking for Latinos in Arizona. It's looking for poor people standing outside of Home Depot. I wish we could just speak the truth in this debate, but unfortunately, it's just become so layered in this cloud of American fantasy. I'm telling you, that border is the meeting place from Latin American cynicism and American hypocrisy. And when you get cynicism meeting hypocrisy, you get the U.S.-Mexico border.
But Maria, if That is a perspective and a powerful one. But Maria, if people hear that what we're now saying is that, you know, countries are fantasies, that the USA is a fiction, is that a path to resolution here?
Please understand that Richard Rodriguez is a great thinker of our time.
I'm ready to acknowledge that. This is a big thought.
I'm saying, but somehow then all of a sudden, because Richard is raising these deep issues the way I am, which is this is deep. This is not about brown-skinned people. This is deep people.
Acknowledged, as deep as it gets. But what does it mean here and now in this world?
What does it mean? It means that that's why your show is on, so that we can actually talk about this, because nowhere else in the media is it being talked about in this way. Nowhere else in the media. I mean, I am not watching the media all the time. I'm busy. You know, I'm a working mom. I'm doing a lot of things. I have a production company. I do many things. But the numbers of Latinos who I have heard as experts talking about this are very, very few. And so once again, we're talking about the media. And when I think about the future, you know, look, you know, this is, I'm going to be very crass here. This is an issue that I, you know, doesn't really affect me. My family is here. My father came.
Yep.
You know, I'm in. My father came as an invited doctor at the University of Chicago. This is not my problem. But the issue is that it's about the future of what this country looks like. And that's the part that we haven't talked about. Can we just talk one moment again with the numbers? That the only, and this is again a scary thing, but it is a fact. And so we have to sit with it. And that is that the only population that is growing, the only population that is going to grow in the future is the Latino population. And so again, and I know it's hard because people are like, we want this problem solved now. I'm like, okay, I get that. But for one second, just understand that if we have a country absolutely divided, where there are people like our caller, the very first caller who said, makes me feel like I don't belong here. Then what are we doing? What is the country that we're creating? And yes, my children, Jeff's children, I don't think Richard has children, but his godchildren, the people who he mentors, will be the ones who are in a leadership position. But what about the rest? What about the rest of these teenagers now who are looking and saying, God, you know, what? This is my country? This is my country? It's deep.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's go to Iris, New Haven, Connecticut. Iris, you're on the air.
Tom, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment. I am a Spaniard, and I have a teenage daughter whose father is Italian, and she has dark olive complexion. She was just accepted to Arizona State University School of Nursing.
Congratulations.
She lives in Connecticut. Thank you. However, she is not going. And her concern is that since this law has been passed, her skin complexion, being a dark olive complexion, she clearly looks Mediterranean or Latin.
Yeah, yeah.
She's concerned that she's going to be stopped when she's out and about. And she does not want to have that happened to her.
Boy.
She's very upset about the law, and because of that law, she will not be going to the School of Nursing at Arizona State University.
Wow.
She will be going to another school. And I just wanted to express that to people that are listening. This is affecting a lot of individuals.
Iris, that is powerful, and that's as real as it gets. We'll meditate on it. I appreciate your call. One more from New York City, Michael. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing today? Thanks for taking my call.
Well, what do you think?
I actually somewhat agree with the Arizona State law, but my problem is that my girlfriend is actually an illegal immigrant. Yes, absolutely. What I want to say is I think we should take a really good look at the immigration laws and how people become legal. I think the system is absolutely broken and needs to be revamped. No walls, no rebuilding walls. These people want to become legal. My girlfriend wants to be a legal citizen, pay her taxes, and do the right thing for this country. I'm an American. I've been born and raised here. I was very ignorant about illegal immigration until I was educated from my girlfriend, who lives in fear every day. I think we have to look at the immigration services and figure out a way to make these people who want to be legal legitimate here.
Fix the system, make a path. Our time is very short, Michael, but I appreciate your call. Jeff Valdez, what are you thinking as you listen here? You know, there have been a lot of politicians who say security at the border first. It gives people a sense of order. Then we'll work all this out. We're kind of hearing today the border itself is a historical fiction. I'm not sure that's going to be comforting to a lot of voters who, in the end, are going to decide policy.
Because, you know, because we jumped to a 2.0 conversation. You know, the politicals are having a 1.0 conversation, and I'll engage in that, and I agree. We should probably have the 1.0 conversation first, you know, and I'll support that. Because, again, the conversation we're having about, to what Maria said, is based on misdemeanor, and I think that's great. Because as we were talking, I was looking up on the Internet, wow, what is the way this is so intense, this must be akin to murder of what the law is, what they're breaking. Holy moly, and I couldn't find it anywhere on the Internet. And Maria said it's a misdemeanor, and then I finally found it. I'm like, it's a misdemeanor. That's the conversation we're having about it. And I can tell you this, the fruit that I had for breakfast this morning, when I go get my car washed today, when I get it parked, when I go to the hotel that I'm going to this week on the trip, I know all those people. If I ever tracked, and if we all tracked in the course of a day, the work that touches us and the products we use that are performed by illegals, we would all be in violation of the law. So let's raise the level of consciousness of this conversation to one of reality rather than one of emotion.
Well, we've gone 2.0 today, and in that we see, as Maria says, the depth of this issue. This is not going to be easily addressed, but there's so much to learn and so much to say. I hope all three of you will come back. We've got to continue this conversation as things continue to unfold. I'm really grateful to each of you. Richard Rodriguez, author of Brown and Days of Obligation and Hunger of Memory, joining us from San Francisco. Richard, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Tom.
Jeff Valdez, chairman and founder of CETV in Los Angeles. Jeff, thank you.
Thank you. And I'm also the chair of Maya Entertainment, so I'm proud of that.
And Maya Entertainment, bravo. And Maria Hinojosa, always great to have you. Thank you for joining us today, Maria.
Hey, and I'm the president of The Futuro Media Group.
The
so there you go.
There you go.
We're doing it, so get in
Listeners,
touch.
Thanks for being here. This is On Point.